Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. It is a snowy Monday here in Toronto. Don't know why I'm going the weather thing. Maybe because there's snow everywhere. Hello, Bob. Did it impact the weather, the snowmageddon? Did it impact your trip over here?
It wasn't so bad. It's a little cold and it's a bit slushy. It's weird. It won't turn into snow and it won't turn into rain. It's just kind of this weird midpoint. Like, it's just damp. But I'm good. No, I like it. Honestly, like, you know me. I like the snow. I am part polar bear. I have antifreeze in my veins.
You should really get that checked. The main thing for me that surprised me is that usually when there's snow, the TV media always plays it up. Because it's the easiest story. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to be engaged and they're going to watch the news. And snow can't sue. So if your facts are wrong, you don't need to say alleged. But they kind of undersold it. There's a lot more snow. And again, it's not that bad. It'll be gone soon. But like, there's several inches and it's still sticking around on my balcony. The TV media, they undersold it. They always oversell snow.
They're not even trying anymore, Matt. Mm. They're not even trying anymore. As you enjoy your coffee, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you know what this is? And I'm placing a, please describe it, on the table.
This is a rock. This is a brown, it looks like a brown leather rock. Old.
Smooth.
Yep, very smooth. It's the size of like an incredibly large acorn, maybe.
Like a chestnut.
Yeah, chestnut. Much better. Thank you.
So the significance of that is that rock was taken out of the Atlantic Ocean from Lawrencetown, Nova Scotia, where I was this summer. And I was out there body surfing. Lawrencetown weirdly gets waves. It's about 35 minutes outside of Halifax and it gets waves. Like, people surf there. And so I went and I body surfed for like an hour. And I had just the nicest time. And my wife and my daughter were on the beach. And they were watching me frolic out there in the waves. And you know, man, I'm kind of a nature boy. So I was just so happy. And my daughter saw that and picked up this rock and saved it to give it to me today. Because today is my birthday.
Today's your birthday?
It is.
Oh my God, happy birthday.
Thanks. You know, I don't usually make a big deal out of it.
No.
I'm only bringing it up because I thought, I have a story for you that I thought you would like. And I thought, so wasn't that nice of the kid?
That's so nice of your daughter.
Now, what did my wife get me? So my daughter got me the rock from the ocean that she saw and saved for 5 months to give to me.
Wow, that is, by the way, that's a really good daughter moment. Good job, Cece.
Great job. Just as a father, my heart is bursting.
And it's not only thoughtful, but it's patient. Mm-hmm. You know, she could have given it to you, or maybe she got in trouble. She's like, here, Dad, I got you a rock, and uses it as a shield so she gets 20 more minutes of screen time. But she saved it for it. That's wonderful.
She played the long game.
She did. I imagine Sandra did something of equal emotional value. You need to also know I'm bad at guessing.
Okay. I opened up the bag, and she got me tea towels.
That's...
because she was at Costco yesterday, and I had mentioned on her way out the door, we could use some new tea towels.
Were they super cool one with like Roy Scheider on it?
No, just Kirkland brand tea towels.
What's worse, no gift or Kirkland brand tea towels?
I think it's so funny. It is so funny. My wife, honestly, when she puts her mind to it, she comes up with the best gifts. She really does. Like, I've sobbed over some of the gifts she's gotten over the years. You know what she did? My old house that I grew up on, Bousted Avenue, she went, it was sold years ago, and they were going to demolish it. And she saw they were going to demolish it. So she went and she got the original door number off the wall from the contractors before they took it down.
That's a hell of a gift.
And she got it framed. And so my office right now is the door number from my original home that I grew up until I was 15 years old. And yes, and yet, this morning I got tea towels.
Is she living off the fumes of that great gift?
She's just so funny.
Yeah.
And she's all or nothing. Like, we had the best laugh. She goes, oh my God, I'm going to sound so bad when you tell Matt. I'm like, I'm not making it up. She's like, you're going to make me sound so bad. I'm like, I'm only going to say what happened.
Sandra, I know you're not listening, but maybe.
She thinks I work at TSN.
Yep, going off to work today. I know. How about Brandon Carlo? So, Sandra, I know you're not listening, but maybe you have a friend who listens to the pod. Bob didn't do this to you. You did this to you.
Made me laugh, and I knew I had to say it because Amy's like all nice to you this morning. She brings you a coffee. Your mug says, "Good morning, handsome" on it.
That's what it says.
She means it.
Yeah, she does.
She wants you to have a good morning, and she thinks you're handsome.
You know what the worst part is, Bob? Amy can't know. She's upstairs showering.
That it's my birthday?
If she finds out it's your birthday and she doesn't know, she's going to feel legitimately guilty.
She's the Kristen Wiig character with the surprise party.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they're going to come in and they're not going to know? Oh!
I remember, by the way, now I'm thinking back to your 50th birthday.
Yeah.
That was I think, hosted by Sandra's, Sandra's brother. Yeah. 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 That was a good night. Anyway.
Honestly, when we decide to do it, we're great. And I've done this to her too. I just think that's so fun.
Tea towels. I hope they're at least one of the curve.
They're not even great.
No, they're not. They're curve. Yeah, they're not going to last.
So I know what I'm going to get her for Christmas. Tea towels.
Yeah. Oh, you have to.
Like now this has to become a thing.
But you have to go get the matching ones. Do you have a Costco membership? I imagine it's in Sandra's name.
No. Do I personally have one? No.
Yeah, no.
I don't even have a car.
Yeah, that's true.
How am I going to get that stuff home? I couldn't even carry the olives out of that place.
What do you think the percentages of people who walk to Costco is?
Like, zero.
Yeah.
That's a great question, though. Who takes the TTC to Costco and then home? There must be some people.
Well, it's like I often wonder, could you walk to Pearson Airport? Is there a front door to Pearson? Because every time you've gone to Pearson, it's either by the GO train or you've been dropped off, driven or whatever. But because I know that the airport in Windsor, you can just walk in and out.
So you come in and you like press the doorbell, ding dong.
Hello. You know, I got a flight to Calgary. But could you walk to Pearson? Is there a front door? I don't know. And I wonder, same thing, does anyone ever walk to Costco?
I love that. And that's a really thoughtful question.
Yeah.
I love that.
Well, happy birthday, by the way, Bob. Happy birthday.
The real thing is I'm going to go out and I'm going to get myself this pass. Like, you know, I'm not a pampering guy.
No.
But there's this sauna that I love. Like, it's a spa and it's a sauna and an ice plunge.
Mm-hmm.
And you go from one to the other. It's called Othership. And I tried it and I love it.
Yeah.
It's the one way in which I'll pamper myself. I don't even want a winter coat. Feel like it's a waste of money. But this I will do. And so I'm going today later and I'm going to the Schwitz.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Do you got a meal prepared? You got something for dinner tonight?
Maybe beef stew tonight.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to cook.
Okay.
There's a lot of sports I want to get to.
There is.
I kind of wanted to just let you cook on football because it was big football weekend. The Grey Cup was decided.
Yep. The Montreal Alouettes, poor Hamilton. They've got the longest streak of not winning the Grey Cup. They haven't won since 1999, which is even tougher when you consider there's 9 teams in the league. Mm-hmm. So the odds are at some point you're going to win it.
Out of 9 teams, the word drought should never be applicable.
Exactly. Mathematically speaking. I mean, it's one thing I think about whenever
there's 4 teams in the division, 3 of them make the playoffs, and there's 2 playoff games.
That's right. And they haven't won since 1999, since Danny McManus was doing it. So them versus Saskatchewan Roughriders. Everyone will be rooting for Saskatchewan because Trevor Harris has never won a Grey Cup or he's the starting quarterback. So he's the sentimental choice versus Montreal, their young quarterback, Davis Alexander. And I think that concludes our CFL coverage, unless you want to continue.
No, I'm good. I realize that as much as I love Canada and how anti-tariff I am and nationalist in many perspectives, I just can't get behind the CFL.
That's fine.
But next pod, when we do the next one before the CFL, at the end of the week, give us reasons to get excited about the Grey Cup.
Absolutely, I will.
I want to do the NFL, though, because I thought this week was really interesting for, frankly, how bad it was. I'm not sure there was a good game all Sunday.
Well, the
first one, the Berlin game was pretty cool, but
yeah.
I missed it because I forgot it was on. And so, basically, it's an overtime game's not exciting if you just drop in for the overtime.
Because you don't have the emotional resonance. You don't have the emotional buildup in the league.
It's like when you win a ring with a team, but you got picked up at the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just doesn't feel the same.
Did you really earn it?
Yeah.
So I texted you this morning because I wanted to ask. This felt symptomatic of the season in general, in which, like, nothing, I don't know, just felt like nothing stuck. And then I looked at the last 11-week sweep, and I thought, or 10-week sweep, has anything stuck at all anywhere? So, Matt, here is my question to you. In the NFL this year, is anybody good?
It's not if anybody's good. The Rams are good. Seattle is legitimate good. Like, there is good out there.
Okay, let me rephrase the question.
There's no great.
Is there anybody really good?
Some weeks, yes. But to your point, no. There's not the dominant team. The funny thing is, the scariest teams are not even the teams with the best record. Baltimore is 4-5, and they are a massive favorite to win the AFC North, even though they have a losing record. Everyone is still the most afraid of Kansas City, even though they're 5-4. I don't even know right now if the playoffs started. One, owners would get a lot less home revenue. And two, I don't know if Kansas City would actually qualify for the playoffs. So to your point, there's no great team. There's moments where the most impressive thing this year might be Matthew Stafford, because at the beginning of the year, we all were very wary of the Rams because we heard 37-year-old quarterback was getting epidermal shots in his back. Mm-hmm. And so like, wait a minute. So the thing you give to pregnant women at very difficult times during birth, you're administering into a 37-year-old man's back in August. And he's been the best quarterback in football. It's crazy.
So let's start there with Stafford and with Jonathan Taylor,
mm-hmm.
who have been probably the two best players in the NFL.
Agreed.
It's fair to say that Stafford's the odds-on. Even though Drake May is ahead of him right now in terms of the betting books, I think that's just to get money on him.
Mm-hmm.
The smart money seems to be on Stafford at this point, and possibly Jonathan Taylor. So if you had to pick between those two right now, if you were giving out an MVP right now, Stafford or Taylor?
The answer should be Jonathan Taylor.
It really should.
Because Jonathan Taylor makes Daniel Jones that much better. It takes a lot of pressure off Daniel Jones, and it just the whole offense runs through Jonathan Taylor, no pun intended. It feels like it's the early 2000s and we're all listening to Green Day.
It was 3 TDs yesterday, 244 yards. I believe that's the fourth game this year where he's had 3 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty much unstoppable at this point. You think back to Saquon last year, who had not just a good year, but a year that's up there in the pantheon of great years.
Yep.
He only finished 3rd in MVP voting because there's this weird thing where it feels like it has to go to a quarterback. I don't know why that is. I've also been a big fan in hockey that goalies should be able to win the Hart Trophy. And I know people will say, well, they have their own trophy and it's the Vezina. But unless you're calling them not players, a goalie sometimes has more contribution in terms of quality and excellence and impact on winning than any position player in front of them. But they just hate doing it. They can't stand giving a goalie the Hart. And in the same way, it's been since 2012, since a running back won the MVP. It was Adrian Peterson.
Yeah.
I looked it up because I was curious. It's been 13 years. This year, nobody's been great at quarterback. Matt Stafford has been really good. It's a good story. We all love him. If he wins, I won't be sad. But Jonathan Taylor is the most dominant player in football right now. So, by way of a setup, why can't people vote for our running back for MVP?
I think it's because the drop-off, if you took Jonathan Taylor away from the Colts and you put a league average running back, whatever that drop-off would be a lot greater if you replaced Matt Stafford with, say, Jimmy Garoppolo,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever, just someone who's slightly above Matt Jones.
Okay, but by that token, then Josh Allen should be the MVP because if you take him off of Buffalo,
oh my God, they're doomed.
Yeah,
it's a great point.
I'm not even sure they have more than 4 wins at this point without Josh Allen.
If it's Mitch Trubisky, who's their backup, Buffalo has a losing record.
So if it's See, it's funny because it's the most valuable player.
It's the V. That's why we love the CFL, Bob.
Because it's the
O, not the V.
The big O.
The big O.
The other big O.
That's right.
The third big O, actually, now that I think.
Oscar Robertson, most outstanding, and whatever this other O you're talking about. Sexual jokes.
Stadium.
Oh, Olympic Stadium. That's right.
The Colts and the Patriots present an interesting conundrum in the AFC for the average fan, which is, how am I supposed to get excited about this team that I didn't know was any good? I'm supposed to be excited about the Bills. I'm supposed to be excited about Kansas City. I could make an argument for Pittsburgh because in the past I've been excited about them. Cincinnati was supposed to be better this year because Joe Burrow was going to come back and show the league, you know, with his two great receivers in front of them, Jason and Higgins, and they were going to light it up. So those were narratives I was prepared for. I was not prepared for the Drake May is actually good. I was not prepared for the Daniel Jones, up off the mat recovery narrative.
And there's one other one, Sam Darnold. Yes. Sam Darnold Even though Minnesota had a great record last year, Sam Darnold lost his final three games, blowout at the end of the regular season. Minnesota got dumped out of the playoffs early. Sam Darnold was horrible. Minnesota elected to go with J.J. McCarthy, the guy they drafted in the first round from Michigan a year earlier. Sam Darnold goes to Seattle, and everyone, even like the smart people like Mina Kimes, were saying, Seattle made a mistake, should have stuck with Geno Smith. What are you doing with Sam Darnold? And Seattle has the best scoring differential in the NFC, maybe second overall. They're 7-2. They've been dominating. So it's the Sam Darnold story as well.
And they're playing the Rams next week, and that feels like the MVP.
Oh, my God.
That's going to be a great game.
Great game.
And if Stafford's really good against Seattle and they win that game, then it feels like you can just hand them the MVP. Quick question about Mina Kimes.
Yeah.
You're a football lover, mm-hmm. and you're in the media.
Yep.
Do people understand how great she is, or
I think so.
Fly under the radar?
No, I think most people really like her. I just think that the people that don't like her, they get amplified more, and then it becomes a conversation about race or sex or misogyny. But I think if you just ask the average football fan, and you said, here, watch 20 minutes, they would really like her because she's really smart, but she's very personable. Like, just there's a lot of charisma, and she walks that fine line of making fun of herself, but also she's so smart.
I think she's great. Her and Pablo Torre are probably my two favorite people in sports right now.
Pablo Torre is the MVP of sports journalism. It's not even close.
You know, there was a time when it was Kornheiser and Wilbon. They were just in mm-hmm. front of everybody. They
yeah.
had the best takes. They were the most entertaining. Now I think it's Kimes and Torre.
And Pablo, to me, is even a massive step up. Because the great thing about Pablo Torre is everyone got angry at him when he spent so much time focusing on what's going on with Bill Belichick's girlfriend. And then it felt like, oh, he's tabloidy. And then he's like, okay, hold my beer. Here's 7 months of actual journalism and lawyers and multiple sources. And everything with Steve Ballmer and sports betting and all of that. Like, Pablo Torre is in the middle of everything right
now. It's like if Deadspin went to Harvard.
Yes. And Pablo will remind you that he went to Harvard.
Well, did he?
Oh, yeah.
Did he go to school in Boston?
Yeah, yeah. By the way, Bob, did I ever tell you I studied wine? It's true. I had.
Okay, so the Colts win mm-hmm. overtime. Very exciting. They're 8-2. Nobody really knows what to do with them. They feel like this should be the odds-on favorite to win the AFC.
So no one trusts Daniel Jones.
But nobody trusts Daniel Jones. And that's just facts.
Yeah.
I guess we'll see. Time warrants exciting. But here, that game was in Berlin, so I did a quick top five. I'll give you a choice. The top five that I prepared here, which is the top five most fun German words to say.
Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got some good ones. Or this weekend, I had a dream leading up to my birthday. It was a premonition of my own death. And so five things that I need to accomplish before I die.
Oh, my God.
Which one would you prefer? Let's do the German.
Yeah, let's do the German one.
Okay. Things that almost made the top five.
Mm-hmm.
Kindergarten, which means children's garden. Zeitgeist, which is the spirit of the age, and Hinterland, which is land that's far away from civilization. All things that have been adopted by English. But here we go. Five, a little bit of warm-up. I just love the way this sounds, okay? Seehund, which is a seal, and it translates as sea dog.
Oh!
Seehund, a dog of the sea. The seal.
I did not know that word. That word's fun.
They're so good at, like, smushing concepts together to create a whole new concept.
I thought all these words were going to be intimidating because it's German, but these words are a delight.
Weltschmerz, which is world sadness. It's like the idea that there is a sadness that permeates the civilization at any given moment. And what I love about German is Welt, that's world, and then sadness, Schmerz.
That sounds like a stain. I got a schmerz on my sweater.
I said I was going to have a schnitz in here. Just the idea that the idea of this existential cloud that hangs over humanity.
Schmerz.
That just schmerz.
Yeah.
I thought of you when I saw this one. Schnapsidee.
Mm-hmm.
An idea that comes sometimes from drinking.
Oh.
Schnapps. An idea that you might have drinking schnapps. A schnapsidee. Ever had any of those while you're drinking wine, Matt?
Maybe.
Maybe. Kummerspeck. Grief weight, the weight that you put on when you're sad. Kummerspeck.
These are like such wonderful sounding words that mean such horrible things.
And just to the side, I thought also in that same spirit, Hüftgold, the little weight that gathers around the hips.
Mm.
Hüftgold.
Oh, like when you're getting older and the metabolism isn't as good as it used to be?
No, it's Hüftgold.
Okay, yeah.
And then the last one is, of course, for you and I, because we love this word, it's schadenfreude,
mm-hmm. yeah.
which is the joy one derives from the suffering of others. And I would like to use that in a sentence. Boy, did Bob feel schadenfreude yesterday when he watched Aaron Rodgers get the shit kicked out of him against the Chargers. See, I'm done with the list. But is
Rodgers... By the way, first off, great list.
Well, thank you so
great list.
Thank you so kindly. Now I can cross one of the things I need to do.
Off before you die.
Before I die.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Rodgers is... It just doesn't make sense in Pittsburgh to me because he's this arrogant prick who looks down on everybody. And Mike Tomlin is the ultimate football coach who's like about empowering the troops. So you've got the ultimate empower the troops guy and then the ultimate fuck the troops. Let them run in front of me. I'm the quarterback guy. So watching him get pounded makes me like, I don't feel good about people getting hurt. I don't want to see him get hurt.
Just humiliated.
I want to see him get humiliated.
Yeah.
I want him, and also I like Brett Favre as a quarterback.
Oh, God, yes. Well, I mean, you know my feelings on Brett Favre.
I toss that up.
Yeah.
For you.
Oh, yeah.
You love Favre. Maybe not as a human being.
No, that's fine. As a human being, seems a lot of flaws, a lot of bad things he's done. As purely as a quarterback, he deserves to be higher up on the rankings.
Watch that Jordan Love.
Watch
him in the water in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Oh, God, be careful.
Okay, but isn't it weird how in football there literally can be a game in which you look at someone and go, I think they're done.
And you can just tell. It's the cruelty of it. You're just looking at it and going, nope, your entire career, this is the moment. It's like in The Simpsons. You can actually see Lisa? This is the exact moment when you ripped Ralph's heart, when you broke Ralph's heart, the Valentine's Day episode. And with Aaron Rodgers, he was getting by on just guile and a lot of short stuff, and they found a way to make it work. And when they beat New England and they beat the Colts, basically they got like 5 turnovers in both games. I think they turned over those two teams 10 to 11 times. And both games were still close. You force 5 or 6 turnovers, you're going to win. Doesn't matter who you are, you're going to win. When I look at Aaron Rodgers, to me, it more represents the bigger picture of how hard it is to find a quarterback. And Pittsburgh was like, well, we don't trust Justin Fields. They were right. And it's like, we're desperate. We've got some good players on defense. We're desperate. We got to try to win. We're not drafting high enough to take a quarterback. Fuck it. Let's plug our nose and hope it works out. And it hasn't.
And this year's been pretty good for quarterbacks having second acts.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. In Indianapolis, Sam Darnold that you mentioned in Seattle. Mac Jones in San Francisco, who's not great, but he's certainly like a...
He's had some really good moments this year.
He's a reasonably good NFL mm-hmm. starter, and it looked like he might be on his way up the league like a Zach Wilson type. But now he's found probably 10 more years to his career based on the year that he's having. So teams obviously have to try and figure out who can I pick up off the recycle heap, who's got more left in them.
It's not Aaron Rodgers.
Kirk Cousins was that guy for years.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins was, yes. But I think in a lot of those situations, those teams had better coaching staffs and more talent around them. Mike Tomlin is a very good coach, but it's not like if you're going to take in an Aaron Rodgers, you've got to have one of those infrastructures like in Minnesota, like in L with the Rams, where everything is designed to uplift the quarterback. And Pittsburgh has some of that. They don't have all of it. Unless he hits DK Metcalf and Metcalf breaks a couple tackles or hits him on a slant, there's just not a lot there. And no one's shocked that this isn't working. I think people are more surprised it worked as long as it did. But the sports books know. And the Ravens are 4-5, and they're -270. To win the AFC North. And for people who don't know betting, if you see a hockey game, the biggest favorite will rarely be more than -200 or 210. So to be -270 means you got a hell of a chance, and they have a losing record. The books know. The books have looked at Aaron Rodgers. They've looked under the hood, and they know this thing isn't going to last.
Do you follow Polymarket at all?
I do not.
It's like gambling, but it's more like predictions about stuff that's happening in the world. So things like elections.
Okay, yeah.
And honestly, why does anyone listen to pundits? Just listen to gambling books. Your point is 100% right. They always know what's going on. I think of Ace Rothstein from Casino, the Robert De Niro character.
Yeah.
And him, like, he knew everything. He would find out if the quarterback had gotten his girlfriend pregnant that week. Yeah. Those guys know everything.
Yeah, the only time they ever got it wrong, 2016. We all got it wrong. We all thought Hillary was going to win.
Not Michael Moore.
Nope, not Michael Moore.
There's a few others, but...
But for the most part.
Actually, you know what Michael Moore said why he'd win? Hmm. He said the second he saw the hats, he knew Trump would win.
Really?
Yep. He said, because everybody at the New York Times and on the seaboards were so snooty that they didn't understand that there was just an incredible power to a guy putting on a ball cap.
It's not wrong.
I love a good ball cap. Mm-hmm. You know, I should point out, actually, we're kind of bouncing around a little bit, and I want to get to analyzing specific games a little bit. But I want to go over to Washington right now and play Detroit. We can talk about the game itself in a second. Washington loses to Detroit 44-22. It was never really close. They imploded. Player got kicked out for punching a Detroit player. Like, Washington is clearly in free fall. But God, did I enjoy watching Trump get beat.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was just so, and he has to stand there and take it and pretend he doesn't hear it and the stoic face and everything. Because you just know, for a narcissist like that, he's thinking, okay, let's get surveillance footage of everybody who booed, and guess who's getting audited this year?
I wonder how his yes men and yes women, I'm inclusive, I wonder how the people around him
can be assholes too.
Exactly, ladies. I wonder how they spun it when the lights were off and no one was paying attention.
Oh, you know what they told them? They weren't booing, sir. They were saying boo Earns.
Boo, I was saying boo Earns.
Simpsons, right?
Just, you know what it is? Just a bunch of elitists watching football, but the real Americans were at home cheering you on, drinking a beer with a red hat on.
I like that he mentions in passing he wants the stadium named after him, and all of his toadies jump out there and say, it's going to happen because the president wants it and it's going to happen.
It is wild where he just says anything. Say, I want this. You know, it's like me as a kid. I wanted a Kit Kat. You know, I usually didn't get one.
Judge Smales' kid. I'm telling you, that's who Trump is.
That is.
Judge Smales' kid. And I want a cheeseburger and I want a club sandwich. And what does Ted Knight say to him?
You'll get nothing and like it. The problem is, we don't have a Judge Smales.
So it was H.R. McMaster in the first administration.
We don't have a because you know what Judge Smales is? He's checks and balances.
He is. He's the Supreme Court doing its job.
Yeah. You know what? President wants a hamburger, wants a cheeseburger, wants a milkshake. You'll get nothing and like it. Like
that's what we need on the Supreme Court.
Yes.
Judge Smales.
That's exactly it. How about a Fresca?
You know what I realized? Because watching him talk about how much he loves the troops after it's been reported that he walked through a military cemetery and said they were a bunch of suckers and they gave their lives away for nothing. He's a ooze. You know how you see a movie where the demon is just like a slick puddle of oil and then it takes human shape and it becomes really charming? I think he's like underneath the skin, which is fitting so loosely these days, there's just ooze.
I miss Mitt Romney. I say it over and over. I just miss boring Republicans. I miss him so much.
I was never a Jason King fan in terms of his policies.
Right.
I'm not even sure I liked him necessarily as a person or how he carried himself. But he was a conservative representing an actual point of view that has merit, which is conservatism. Like, I'm not one. But it's not like when an intelligent conservative speaks, I think, oh, they sound like they're on drugs or, you know, like they... You know, the medicine is wearing off.
Yeah.
No, I feel like conservatives deserve someone better than Trump.
Agreed.
You know, real conservatives.
Yeah, exactly.
The ones who follow Trump, they're not conservatives. They're populist maniacs out for revenge.
Yes, and just holding on to power and all that. And yes, and there is a place for it. Like, you can have the conversation. We need strong borders against Mexico, not because Mexicans or people close to Mexico are brown. It's because if you are poor, there's probably a greater chance you could commit crime because you have less to live. You perceive less to live for. So you need strong borders because of issues with crime. I'm here for that conversation. But then with Trump, it's just fucking maniac stuff all the time.
He's a horse in a hospital, to borrow the great bit from John Mulaney.
It is. Yeah, we're way off topic. John Mulaney's bit during Trump's first administration describing it as a horse in a hospital. And no one knows what's going to happen. And will everything...
call the horse.
It's like, really? The horse is in a hospital? How did that happen? And the worst part is sometimes it's quiet. And you wonder... what's that horse doing in there?
It's actually a pretty good job, Mulaney.
Thank you.
I don't know if your Mulaney's better than your Glick. I think you put more into the Glick.
Yeah, well, the Jiminy Glick is, it's just, it allows you to add a little more oomph to it.
Watch out for that J.D. Vance. Trump's over already. He's unpopular. He's old. After 2026 in the midterms, it doesn't matter because he can't run again.
Wink.
But he's over, and they know it. They're cropping up Vance to take over. Vance is basically like a Chucky doll.
Mm. I did enjoy the book. Many, many years ago, Hillbilly Eulogist.
He's a smart guy. Yeah. That's the problem, man.
Yeah.
Because Trump is an ooze. Mm-hmm. But Vance is smart, and he's being controlled by Peter Thiel, who might actually be the Antichrist. We'll see. Let's talk about Josh Allen.
Sure.
Because I really am curious who the Bills are. There was this moment in the game yesterday I'm watching. I kind of only could watch. You know, sometimes when your team sucks and you're like, I'm just not in the mood to eat this right now.
Yeah.
You feel this weird obligation because you follow the team to see what's going to happen. But, God, they were just so bad against Miami yesterday. And what was it, 30-13 in the end?
30-13. Yeah. The worst part is, and I mean, yes, you can expect a bit of a letdown after that big win over Kansas City.
This was a trap game for sure.
I understand that. But 30-13 flatters Buffalo. Just like 5-4 flattered the Maple Leafs against Carolina.
Which we will get to.
Which we'll get to. But the first half, 90 yards of offense. 0-for-6 on third down. Miami's defense is so bad. You know, maybe, you know, Dallas or Cincinnati, they got worse defenses, but Miami's not that far off. And Miami traded away one of their better defensive players in Jalen Phillips. And they go out and they dominate. And Buffalo has Josh Allen, and then what? They can't stop the run. We don't trust the receivers. James Cook is a well above average running back. We fumbled the ball away. But they don't really have much.
You know how the other day when Phoenix played the San Antonio Spurs and they double-teamed Wemby and they swarmed him and it was almost like a college defense where you just attack the other team's best player with everything you got and let the other guys beat you?
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. And San Antonio was proven not to have enough around him, not with Fox out and Harper's out now too. But my point is sort of the narrative after that was, did we learn something? Did we learn how to stop San Antonio and Wemby? And I was watching that game with James Cook yesterday, and I was thinking, did the league just learn something about Buffalo? That if you shut him down, Cook, that is, then as great as Josh Allen is, he just can't win by himself because the horses aren't there. Cook's been great. Second best running back in the league, probably, this year. But, you know, I kept thinking about the band The Doors, mm-hmm. and that they have one of the world's greatest front men ever. And then everybody else, like, who are they? You take Jim Morrison out of the Doors, and they're four Jackson and Jill playing a Ramada Inn in Kansas City.
Nice Final Tap reference.
Thank you. And you take Josh Allen off that team, and as we said earlier, they're probably a four-win team, maybe a three-win team. But did we learn something about them? Like, in your football estimation, was the Miami loss just a bad loss and everybody underperformed? Or can you walk away from that and go, I think this is how you just shut Buffalo down?
What I learned is more of a, all the worst case scenarios for Buffalo are coming to the surface. That I'll go Game of Thrones. Josh Allen is Hodor. And
oh, what a great reference.
And
Hodor.
And he is, Josh Allen is holding back the fact that they've got a very good offensive line and not much else. They're not very good defensively. They can't stop the run. They don't have an elite pass rusher. They don't have an elite cover corner. They don't have many targets that can get open. They've got some good tight ends, but they don't have nearly enough. And no single quarterback, at some point, you can only fix so many of the other problems, and all the other problems are starting to rush out, and they're going to trample all over Josh Allen.
So Sean McDermott, the coach, is being interviewed on the sidelines. The question, obviously, is what are you going to do in the second half? And his answer was one of my favorite football answers. We just got to play Buffalo Bills football.
Oh, God.
One of the great cliches of all time, which, by the way, the broadcast crew complimented him in the third quarter for really nailing it and identifying what they had to do. But I thought when he said this guy, they are playing Buffalo Bills football in the sense that some weeks they look really great and unstoppable. And every Bills fan knows there's two, maybe three games a year where they look so shit, you think, I don't even think they're going to make the playoffs. I expect they'll make the playoffs.
Yep.
But I don't think they're going to win the division.
Right.
New England is now 8-2, and they don't look like they're slowing down. They look like they're getting better.
And New England has the easiest schedule down the stretch.
And Buffalo's isn't that easy. They play Philly. Mm-hmm. Next week they play Tampa Bay. They feel like a 10-win team. I can't see them winning 11.
They feel like a soft 10-win team that probably can get bounced in the first round of the playoffs. It's just, who are the guys that can carry Buffalo if Josh Allen is a B, you know, and you're going up against a really good team?
Stephon Diggs was traded, I don't know how many seasons ago, 3 seasons ago, is that what it is?
Yeah, he bounced with Houston, now he's with New England.
And people thought, okay, like, he was really good, but, you know, you walk past certain players and it doesn't make a big deal, but they've never really replaced him as, who is the threat? Who's the guy you got to worry about? You can't tell me that
Shakir.
Or you know, like Dalton Kincaid is the closest thing they have to a threat. Now he's hurt, and we'll see how long he's going to be hurt for. That's a big loss for that team, because nobody else really feels dependable. Who are you going to? Keon Coleman? Elijah Moore? Who are you going to?
No, you need the one, and it doesn't have to be Jamar Chase, but you need the one guy that you can depend on 3rd and 6.
Do you remember when Randy Moss went to the Patriots?
Yes,
and everybody finally exhaled. It was like, he's got someone to throw to downfield.
Last year, when Buffalo lost in the AFC Championship game to Kansas City, one of the big plays was a deep pass that Dalton Kincaid couldn't hold on to. And it was a tough catch. And Kincaid is a rookie. But he needed, Josh Allen needed his receiver to be a star. Because he couldn't be at that moment.
So we're going to run out of time. I mean, we really got to talk about the Leafs. So I'm just going to go through it. Is anybody good checklist with you?
Okay, we'll do it quick.
New England beats the Bucs. Are either of them any good?
New England, I don't trust their pass rush. They can't run the ball, but they're great at stopping the run. Drake May is a hell of a story. They are good. Okay. Tampa, I don't know how healthy they are. When is Godwin coming back? When is Bucky Irvin coming back? Baker Mayfield's a great story, but same point there. Good. I would put New England a slight bit ahead of them.
I'm going to cluster these together. The Rams and the Seahawks, are either of them good?
Yes, absolutely. They are both good teams.
The Colts, are they good?
Yes. No, they have to be good. I'm sorry. They are a good team.
Eagles play tonight. Are they good?
I still believe in the Eagles. I believe in the Eagles because I believe in the talent all over that team. They brought in Jalen Phillips. At some point, they just got to satiate A.J. Brown and everything will be fine.
Denver. Is Denver any good? Pretty mediocre game on Thursday against the Raiders. 10-7?
Yeah, 10-7. It's in some ways, it's almost unfair. Like, no, they're fine. Because at some point, like, Bo Nix has had 2 great fourth quarters, but the majority of his season has been very underwhelming.
Is Baltimore any good?
Baltimore could be. Like, honestly, they could be good. That's a horrible answer, but, you know, Derrick Henry's been great the last 4 weeks. Lamar Jackson, 2 straight good games in a row now. And as we talked about earlier, the books say Baltimore is good.
The Lions and the Chargers.
Chargers, no. They lost too much on the offensive tackle position. The Lions, I think the Lions will be. I think the Lions by the end of the year will be considered the second. No worse, they'll be the bronze medal best team in the NFC.
So last night, I'm watching the Leafs game. Mm-hmm. And they go up 3-2. Nice goal by Willie. He's looking good. And I thought, my little buddy Matt. Finally, some good news for him. Some happiness. The team, sure, they lost to Boston on Saturday, but this would be a heck of a bounce-back win, back-to-back to take out Carolina, who's a good team. I'm happy for Matt. On Monday, he can go in and have some kind of optimism about a local team. Then the collapse. I'm going to let you cook, Matt. They lose 5-4 to Carolina yesterday. They lose to Boston on Saturday. Very disappointing. Back-to-back losses. Team doesn't look good. I believe they sit 6th in the Atlantic right now. I'm going to sit back and let you cook.
10th in the East right now, -1 in goal differential. Here's the big shame, Bob. It wasn't even the Nylander goal. It was the next goal. Auston Matthews scored to make it 4-2. And when you go back and watch that goal, there was so many puck battles being won.
Just one battle after another.
One battle after another. And the end of the period, it's a 4-2 game. And you're like, okay, maybe they can turn it on. And then they got outshot 22-2 in the third. And the worst part is, I don't even mind the first 3 goals scored by Carolina. Because sometimes you have to remember, the other team's got really talented players as well. But the Taylor Hall goal that tied it at 4, brutal turnover by Philippe Myers. The Stankoven goal, the game winner, there was stank all over the ice. That was a brutal turnover by Jake McCabe. The worst part is the game-tying goal by Taylor Hall. And we talked about it in the last pod. There's nothing worse than if you're watching a game and you think, oh, the other team must be on the power play. And then you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1. Holy shit, this is even strength. And yet Carolina when they scored that goal, I'm like, there was like three players around Dennis Hildeby who's not getting any help, and there was no Maple Leafs. Like, the worst part here, Bob, John Tavares afterwards said, we play like an immature team. The Leafs are the third oldest team in the NHL. You can't be the third oldest team in the NHL and be immature. This is a bad team.
I'm almost impressed by their willingness to never learn anything.
This is like, Bob, this is like me on vacation when I decide I'm not going to learn one letter. I'm not going to learn the new language. I am the guy that, you know, that's been in two different countries and been in Italy and said gracias. I'm like, no, not only am I not going to learn, I'm going to use the language from the last country I'm in to use the four rudimentary words I know in the new country I'm in.
To bring back another Simpsons reference, it's like when Bart is walking by the bookshelf and stops and looks at them unprompted and just says, stupid books.
Exactly.
I feel like these guys are thinking, stupid breakout drills.
They're bad. It cannot just be, well, we don't have Chris Tanev. If your plan is we're going to rely on the 35-year-old defenseman who blocks everything with his retina, if you're relying on that guy, you're in trouble. So that part is on Brad Treliving and management. But the weird thing is, Bob, defense was good last year.
Yeah.
They were good last year. And this year,
they're getting older. Okay, I just want to point something out. One of my great beefs with local hockey media is that, is everything okay now?
Yeah, there was a weird red light, but everything is, everything is fine.
Are we back on? Are we good?
Yeah, take a look. Like, Bob.
Yeah, technical difficulty?
No, but good for you. Like, I'm looking at our audio board and everything's working, but yet on Focusrite, on my red box, there's a blinking red light going on right now. But, I mean, it looks like we're fine.
Well, let's just assume that the mixer is excited about the quality of our performance.
Yeah.
See that my vocals are so much softer than yours.
But I fixed that in post. And this is bad pod right now.
This is terrible. Okay, I want to get back to this. Yeah. So what point was I making? Oh, yes, the local writers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of them are fans.
Yeah.
Like, they don't admit it, but a lot of them are fans.
Mm-hmm.
And they also are now increasingly former players.
Yeah.
Who are clearly invested in the team doing well. And there's just, year after year, this mentality, well, they got to win now. This year, they can't take a step back. They got to win now. And they lost their best player in Mitch, or at least, 1B to 1A with Austin Matthews. The defense is getting older. The goaltending was a question mark, and it's regressed a little bit. You know, I don't think there's talking in November about how Stolarz has been overworked.
It's November 10th. That can't be overworked.
And he's already too exhausted to finish the year. Obviously, the Joseph Woll thing, we don't really know,
mm-hmm.
but when he'll be part of the team again, if he'll be part of the team again, I'm assuming he's going to. Do you know anything?
No, I mean, he's with the Marlies right now. So they're ramping him back up. So he will, they haven't said anything about what happened.
But they paid money to make this guy their goalie.
Yes.
By November, he's already too exhausted for all the starts.
And good for Stolarz, he's come out and said, it's not it.
So let me repeat something that I say, it feels like all the time, but particularly over this past summer. This isn't their time to win right now, guys. They've got to reload on the fly. They didn't do enough to the core. They got rid of one player from their core four. That means they kept 75% of their core, all of their defensemen and the goalie. The same coach came back from last year. This is the same team, just older. Pieces they brought in are slow. They are a step slower than they were last year, and they have one less really good player. Why did everyone think this was the year that they were going to be suddenly good? Because the narrative changed?
I think
because they were going to change the way they looked at hockey with Mitch out of town?
I think what it was they just felt that they were going to be more balanced, that Matthews was going to be healthy, that the defense was going to be as good as last year, that the goaltending that was like third in the NHL, that they had the third or fourth best team save percentage, that all the good was going to carry over and you'd have more depth and balance and Matthews was fully healthy. I think that was the reason that people thought, and they had more money to play with. Tavares getting paid less and no more Marner, so that was going to bring balance.
Even at that, they lost in the second round.
Yep, but they lost in seven games. Of course, they got humiliated.
They lost in the second round. Mm-hmm. So all we had to do is bring back basically the same team, have them perform at least as well as they did or overperform, and then we're going to win the cup. It's not a plan.
No.
It's a fan's hope. And fans are allowed to hope because they're not paid to make decisions. But it feels like this team, this organization, MLSE or wherever it starts, is afraid just to say, guys, we're in over our skis. This isn't it. It's a bit like with the Raptors. The Raptors have lots of good pieces. They don't fit together. They're a weird team. It's a conundrum. I'm reading all the bloggers because they're fans. They love this team because the numbers show how good they are. Guys, they'll be lucky if they're a playing team.
I have a little bit higher feeling on the Raptors.
So do I, to an extent. But my point is, people lose sight of reality when they focus on what their team might do and not the reality of what every other team is doing.
And to add to that, I don't know if another team's played more home games than the Maple Leafs.
I mean, easy, soft schedule. They're going to, what is it, 7 of the next 11 are on the road. They're starting to play harder teams. Their goaltender is too exhausted to play. Why would anyone think this is going to get better? They're sixth in their division right now with an easy schedule that was basically at home and most of their players healthy.
On Thursday night, it's $115 for standing room only for Leafs and the Kings.
Right.
If they put up a turd like they did against Carolina, Thursday night could be a very ugly night here in Toronto with this team if they look like how they've looked.
That's an interesting point. That's a really great point. Do you want to elaborate on that? Because I've got thoughts, but why do you feel it could be this Thursday?
It could be this Thursday. They go on the road on Tuesday against Boston. They could easily lose that game. And now there's been enough time has passed where the Blue Jays, whatever our joy is, now the focus is fully on the Maple Leafs. And I think there's a realization of, oh no, we're bad. And a lot of that's been hidden because of the Blue Jays. But now all eyes, all attention is going to be on it. And it's an expensive ticket. And there's going to be that place is still going to be packed. And if they're bad, then I think that's going to be, there's going to be there could be a very negative emotional release unto the ice, unto these players, if they look like what they did this weekend.
I'm going to add one extra piece to it, and I think you're right. And you're pretty good at keeping your finger on the pulse of things because you're on the air. You're talking to people all the time. Mm-hmm. And I sense this too. I trust your opinion more than mine, but I sense it too, is they're not just like mediocre. I wouldn't say bad. I think they're mediocre, but they're also stuck. They don't have a lot of draft picks. Most of their players are signed up long-term. This is the team.
This is the team.
This is the team, and there isn't help coming. So even if they're mediocre now, they're mediocre, and we talked about this. The arrow was on its way back down. It's fairly high in the air right now. They're okay. They're not terrible. But they're not good, and they're only going to get worse. And I think that realization is going to come in. You mentioned the Fraser Minton deal before we started the pod and how, you know, he got traded away so they could bring in Brandon Carlo. And that's just another young player that they got rid of. They got rid of a first-round draft pick to pick up Scott Laughton, who might be a fourth liner. There's just this desperation for the team to never fall backwards, to make good on the promise of this fucking Mount Rushmore of core four, which doesn't even exist anymore. They've gutted the team. They've gutted their futures. And they're not that good. They're expensive, they're old, and they're slow.
And on top of that, one of the hardest things to do in hockey is to score at even strength. And Matthews, Nylander, and Tavares are all near the top at scoring at even strength, and they're still like 10th in the East. Mm-hmm. And will Morgan Riley become the new whipping boy? That's going to be a conversation. There's always
hope not.
I hope not as well.
Just love that guy.
We all love that guy. And it's funny, though. You know, it could be at the end of the day, Morgan Riley was the Kaiser Soze of all of it. Because he's been there longer than all of them. And every team that wins a Stanley Cup, for the most part, you have that one true alpha defenseman. And Morgan Riley's never been that guy. That could be looked on like, well, you know, the forwards are to blame. But what about Morgan, who's kind of been quietly in the corner, doesn't get the same amount of focus? I do wonder, will there be a backlash against him?
Because last night was the Hall of Fame game. I think the backlash is going to be Austin. Let me explain. Mm-hmm. I hope it's not against Morgan. I don't know that Morgan's good enough to have everybody turn on him.
Fair. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not like Larry Murphy was a great leaf and everybody turned on him. But I think he's garnered so much goodwill over the years, Morgan Riley has. People are reluctant to turn on him as much as they might. Austin Matthews goes into the arena yesterday and he's wearing the Joe Thornton jersey. And it's the Hall of Fame game. Thornton's going in. They played together back in the day. They obviously really like each other. And Thornton was brought in for the same reason that Marlowe was brought in. Patrick Marlowe was brought in. Ryan O'Reilly was brought in to be that extra piece that was going to help these young guys learn how to win. And it's never happened. And I thought, at what point, Austin Matthews wearing this Joe Thornton jersey, at what point does it stop being aspirational for the young guy who's going to learn how to make good on it? And then at one point, are you just wearing a jersey of a guy who did your job better?
Yeah. I couldn't help but, to that point, Bob, I couldn't help but wonder, like when I was thinking about opening thought ideas, with it being the Hall of Fame induction ceremony, we could be watching a bunch of Maple Leafs that eventually go in the Hall of Fame, and we'll look at them more as what if. But then I was like, no, okay, that's too reactionary from two losses over the weekend. But I was certainly having those thoughts.
Like the thing about, I'm going to make a point here, and I think people are probably going to come on board with the, even though it sounds crazy, but I think William Nylander is the best player on the team.
Right now, yes, I agree.
No, not right now. William Nylander is the best player on the team.
That's a bold statement. Matthews, see, I would push back. I think Matthews at his best is better than Nylander.
What is
because
his best?
What is best? Well, this guy scored 69 goals. He's a guy who's 2 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. And since then, who scored more goals?
Nylander has scored more goals. I think Matthews is a better player defensively.
Who's driving play more? Who can they use in more spots?
Nylander is driving play.
He's the center of the – he's the focal point of the power play.
Yep.
Because he's the most dangerous offensive weapon they have. They can either put him on the first line to help Matthews or put him on the second line. Everywhere they put him, he's there to help people get better. You can say that that's right now and that – but that presupposes that somehow Matthews is going to be Austin Matthews again. And I'm not seeing it. He hasn't been the guy you're talking about in a season and a half, whereas Nylander just keeps getting better and better. He's their best player. He might wind up having maybe not as many total goals.
He will.
Because Austin, lit it up so fast and so hard early. But from this point on, this is Willie's team.
I think I don't think the book's written on that. I think it can go back and forth.
I'm calling it. It's a lock. This is a Bob Mackowitz prediction.
November 10th, 11:09 a.m. It is now William Nylander's team. That is a hot take.
Really, the heart.
I like it.
He chokes the least during the playoffs. He seems to like the city the most.
Yeah.
He's the one who adjusts the most. He's having more fun than anybody else. Austin Matthews just seems sad all the time, and we keep talking about him in the past tense.
Oh, no, we can't have sad Matthews. We had sad Marner. We had sad Marner before. Could we have sad Matthews?
His inspirational speech about John Tavares and his 500th goal. Everybody, I think that we can agree this is a great career. I'm looking at this guy thinking, this is a momentous moment. I'm falling asleep.
And he's giving a speech like the 9-year-old nephew at a wedding.
He's the ring boy.
He's the ring boy. And yet he'll never get a ring. Before we end this.
How long do we have?
We have like 2 minutes.
Jesus.
I just need to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Jeff Pollock, jeffpollock.com, Jeff with a G. And here's the main thing you need to know about Jeff Pollock. Tomorrow is Remembrance Day and his office is closed. He closes it every Remembrance Day so everyone can honor and support the troops in whatever manner they want. So we can yammer on all we want about Jeff Pollock, but that is a man of character and what he does there kind of speaks to it.
I'm actually going with his company tomorrow to Queen's Park.
Oh, I think I'll be there as
well. Are you going to go?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. I'll see you there tomorrow then.
Yeah.
Quickly before we go, Oedipus countdown. Max Domi, since we talked last, the idea here is how many goals does Max need to become the single season greatest Domi goal scorer on the Leafs?
Yeah.
His father, Ty, has 15. Right now, Max has 3, so he's 13 off the pace. That has not changed, and he has 1.5 games on assist. So the Oedipus countdown has not moved.
Bob, happy birthday, and may all your dishes be dry with your new tea towels.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom, and if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.